Okay, we're going to take your phone calls now with Daryl Sims on Coast to Coast AM. In your work, The Alien Hunter, you talk about some incredible descriptions for the various types of implants and their traits. Describe some of the characteristics for us again, Daryl.
I'm happy to do so. The main thing that we've found in the implants is the wide variety of the ones that we have found. Some of them are cocooned by a biological covering, which I predicted when I spoke to 250 surgeons at John Muir Medical Hospital in 1994. I made four predictions. One is that the objects would never, if they were alien related, would be, show no signs of inflammatory response in the human body. Of course, many doctors there just didn't believe that. The second thing I predicted was that if the objects are really alien in origin, there will be no technology. The third thing I reported was that the objects, in fact, we're looking at here on MRIs and X-rays are really alien in origin, is that they will have a different nerve cells surrounding the biological mass. And the fourth thing I told them, which I rarely report, but I did put in my current book on implants, is that all those things that I just described are passe, they're old. That the new stuff that we're going to be looking at will in fact be central nervous system cells, a collection of cells that will be in fact just a literal little mini brain, in my opinion, in which the alien can do whatever it is he needs to do without your permission.
Let's go to the phone. South Dakota we go. Aaron, first time caller, you're up with Daryl Sims. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, George, what's up?
Hi.
You have a pretty cool show. I was wanting to know, maybe the government's behind doing all this.
What do you think? What do you think?
Well, I think that with a huge black budget that is so big that no one's even allowed to look at exactly what. Some people not even allowed to see the amount, much less know where it went. Certainly, things that, like that are possible. But the fact is that my implantation took place in 1960. There was no military present. There was no anybody there. It doesn't mean that that couldn't happen. It doesn't mean that it hasn't happened. And I do cover some of that in my book. But the main thing that I am concerned with primarily is how this stuff started long before we had the tech or the ability to do it. So if we're doing it, we're mimicking somebody.
True. All right, next up we go to Anthony in Glendale, Arizona. Hi, Anthony, go ahead.
Yeah, the way the different races of aliens, however, to be my advice or my opinion, they might be all working like somehow like our UN, and they might have an idea of what's going on with our future. The future is they might be the ones in control of the future, such as, example, 2012. Everybody thinks that we might be ended by an asteroid or whatever. Who knows? They might have a plan of what they want to do with us as far as the Earth is concerned. That's why they're taking all these tests. So this way they would have anything for whatever being, whatever info they may need for their future or whatever. So we might be just their guinea pigs, knowing how our future is going to end. And we're wondering about all kinds of different things. So I don't know. That's my opinion. But, if you want, I'll just take it off the air. But.
All right.
I'd like to comment about that.
Yep.
That is a distinct possibility, of course. Anything's possible. But what I have to go with is the evidence and or testimonies that we do have of people who have been involved in these events. In the double mass abduction event of December 8th and December 11th, 1992, a remarkable event that happened in Houston and in several other cities in two different states, eight witnesses were taken to a massive craft by the smaller UFOs. In fact, that's the one that I told you that we think we may have the film of, that was 600 miles across, 50 miles thick. In that event, the engineer there, my senior investigator, was one of the people taken, and he saw a map. He said, I call it a map because I don't know what it was. He said it kind of looked like a map to me. It was three-dimensional, and he said it was a map that had a short little section that was not completed. It looked kind of like a road race map. And he said, and I just don't know how to describe it because, well, I don't know what it was. He said, but I asked this Nordic character that was standing there, what is that? And he said, it's the program. And he said, indicated it was for their involvement with us, quote unquote. And that was the length of time that they were involved. He said, I multiplied that length, that last short span, times the full length in my head. Of course, he's an engineer. He'd do that. And he said it multiplied into about 6,000 years. And he said that last 100-year span, I asked him, what was that about? And he said, that's what's left. And that's all he would say.
We've got Terry in Toronto on the international line. Terry, go ahead.
Good morning, George. Good morning.
Morning.
Darryl. I wanted to ask Darryl about this samurai sword alien neutralization incident.
Yes.
It sounds like there were copious amounts of fluid available from that incident. I was curious as to how it was collected, and also these samples. When did this occur, and how long will these samples be viable for DNA testing?
Well, testing, first of all, the sample that occurred in October, and the samples were collected fairly rapidly. The next question is that DNA samples can, if they're not denigrated, they're or destroyed by other processes, generally are going to be are going to be okay. In other words, as an example, in a sexual assault, semen in someone's underwear is an example for they've even done that years later and still been able to identify things about people. They had underwear, in other words, in effect from before they had DNA testing. And as a result, later when they were doing DNA testing, they actually could match the guy. So that's this first thing is the samples have already been taken and have already been looked at by medical and scientific personnel. And they're interested, to say the least. We're not making any claims or anything right now. The second thing that I can tell you is that I will be going out to take additional samples myself. We'll have a scientist with us as well and some other medical people as well. The third thing I want to tell you, which is kind of curious, is my daughter-in-law, she's my daughter-in-law now, but she was a visitor at our home back in the early 1990s. She fled Brazil to get away from these entities. The reason I bring this story up is simply because had an event again in our home, and she was crying the next morning, incoherent, and she had stayed awake the rest of the night. And we said, what? And she had picked up a piece of firewood off of the fireplace and was swinging it at the entity that came to the wall. She thought that they wouldn't follow her from Brazil. Well, they did. Anyway, we dealt with her and got her all calm and everything, and she kept crying. I said, what is the problem? She said, they always come in threes, three nights. So I said, well, I'll be waiting tomorrow night. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, exactly when they come, she says. So anyway, I wanted to do something interesting. I wanted to see if there was anything spiritual that could ever happen in this stuff. This is a great opportunity. I prayed about it and I felt absolutely comfortable with not doing anything that night. And so I didn't do anything. I just went on to bed. And next morning, she was crying incoherently again, and she said, you were going to get up. And I said, that's true, I was. I'm sorry. But she was smiling and crying at the same time. I said, what is it? And she said that an angelic being. She said, first of all, the same guy came through the wall again. And she said, then something far worse than he was. And she said, I'd never seen anything like it. She said, I just dropped the firewood. I just couldn't even hold it in his presence. And she said, at that moment, she said, an angel came through and appeared in the room. And she said, those other two couldn't get out of the room quick enough. The third night, I swore to her I would be up and awake. And this is what's amusing about John's case and this case. I was sitting there at 3 o'clock in the morning with a samurai sword. John and I both are martial artists. We didn't know this when we first met. But I've had over $1,000 work done on that blade. And anybody that came through that wall was going to come through in a multiple personality. They did not come through, and she sat up in a complete sleep and looked at me and smiled and said, they know you're here. And I said, yes, I know that. I said, but now they know that I know that they know that I know, and one of these days somebody's going to come through that wall, and it's going to be a very unhappy day for them. Well, apparently John got to him before I did.
Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hey, Steve, you're up with us, too. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Darryl, great job. I was wondering why the guy that the farmer rancher, what if they were visiting him so often, why didn't he tape them, or do they know when you're taping them, like videotape? And also, don't they give off some kind of a green fluorescent fluid or something like that, or light?
Yes, very good questions. The first answer to your question, I think I can answer pretty well for him, is that in most of the cases we've ever seen with any of these incidents, whenever you try to set up a video camera, the very first thing they do is they'll either not come in or they'll turn the camera off, or you'll see it knocked over. They, in my opinion, the entity with that large black eye cover can see in the infrared, ultraviolet, X-ray, and visible light range all at the same time. Often they will be, quote-unquote, scanning you whenever you're in the on the slab, so to speak, and you can't figure out, like, well, what are they looking at? You know, they're looking at my skin or whatever. Imagine that being a floor scan, that they could literally look inside.
Okay.
And what they're looking for, I don't know. The second thing is that there is a fluorescence that shows up on many abductees that have actually had physical contact where they took them or they were touched by the entity. That fluorescence I discovered in 1992 is the best way to think of it is an alien fingerprint. Basically, a alien sweat is the best way to think of it. It penetrates the skin on contact, and it will not come off.
Okay. One more question. Can you stop them if you don't fear them? Is that what you're telling everybody?
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that there are different things that work for different people to allow them to become proactive. And I'm not saying everybody has to go out and bust them in the head or whatever, but I'm saying if somebody else came into your home and took your kid and sexually assaulted them or did other things to them over a period of years and you caught them, what would you do? Invite them to dinner or tell them that they were aliens from another planet and have a Coke on me?
Right.
Don't think that's going to happen. The point is that he was protecting his family, and I certainly appreciate that. I have no personal interest in chopping an alien up into little pieces. Though I would if it tried to harm any of the people in my family, and they have.
Well, I took it like they can read your mind, and that's how they get control of you.
You are so correct. But here's the thing: we're not. I am not. Since I've been conscious during a lot of my events, there's quite a bit I've actually learned about the entity's thinking and his processes. And if my information is correct, I go out and test it. That's why I test what I do, and I hunt them. That's what I do, and I do that various different ways. One of the things we've done is actually test some of our skills and our abilities out through other abductees. I will give an abductee that qualifies for the program and agrees to do it post-hypnotic suggestions in which they can do things. I'll induce amnesia so the alien can't figure out that they actually know it, and neither will the individual know it. They'll just end up doing it. We've actually hypnotized several of the entities while on their craft through an abductee. We're not powerless, is my point. We just don't popularize this stuff because it's controversial, and we're not out there to ring the dinner bell and say, oh, here's what a bunch of hypnotists need to try to go do, and they end up getting somebody hurt.
Daryl, since Dr. John Mack died in that tragedy in England when he got hit stepping off the curb by a drunk driver, in some of the things you're doing. But is anybody else in the medical field really pushing this? I know Bud Hopkins is still doing it. He's not a doctor. I don't see any good doctors out there.
Well, we have a doctor that's trying to call in right now. He just emailed me, and if he's online there, he may be one of your callers on the – he was trying to – I told him he'd call in if he wanted to.
What's his first name?
Just the best way to describe him he'll probably show up as, let's see here.
What's it say?
L-Doc.
Oh, okay. Well, we don't have that on.
L-Docy. Okay. And he's one of our physicians. And we've got two cardiovascular surgeons. We've got a primary care physician here in Houston. In fact, he spoke at our Houston UFO Network group that I just restarted here in Houston. He spoke to us the other night and sat there with me and went over a ton of medical evidence that we have. We've got a whole variety of kinds of cases, and we just don't. And I don't mean to say this in a bad sense.
We just got so much of it that it just takes a fortune to process this stuff, and I'm just tapped out. So we just do it as we can, unless somebody's a benefactor is going to come forward and assist us with this extremely expensive DNA testing and other stuff we're doing. It just goes on the burner as a back burner as to who's going to get first and what lineage. And what
DNA line. Is very expensive, Daryl. I know that Lloyd Pye's trying to do it with his star skull, and it's tough.
That case should have been resolved years ago. Years ago, somebody would step forward and helped him.
Let's go to Louisiana. Hello, Stacy. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi. I'm a big fan. I love the Coast to Coast show.
Thank you.
And Daryl, I admire your work. But I have a question about one of the guests you had on tonight. His name was Jeff, and I believe he was from Pennsylvania.
Yes.
I think I remember seeing the UFO show that he was on, that he was interviewed for the History Channel. And if I'm correct, he had some sort of heavy metals poisoning.
I don't know. Did he, Daryl?
That I don't know. I don't know his the exact medical condition, but he could certainly answer. Yeah, I'll tell you what. If you'll email me,
I just did.
I will.
But sometimes
find that out
my emails don't go through, and I have a very similar case.
Yes.
And I was hospitalized for months with heavy metals poisoning, and after I watched that particular show, I did try to get in contact with him, but was unable to locate him because I was very interested in finding out what type of heavy metals poisoning.
I will help you with that, and if you send me some information about your case, we'll have some of our doctors look at your stuff and see if we can help you with that.
Also, there's chelation therapy out there if you get heavy metal poisoning. I wonder if there's anybody out there practicing that. Let's go to Sacramento, California. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. I'm not even going to try to pronounce your name. Go ahead.
Thank you. Hey, I just want to.
How do you pronounce your name, by the way?
Archimedes.
Okay, great name. Go ahead.
Okay, so hey, I had been abducted back in '82 and '83, and I'd been through the same experience. They were very brutal, and just recently, I believe that I was abducted again just last month. I have a triangle marking on my knee, and it's been bloody, and I have no idea where it came from. But I understand what you guys have been through. I've had to suffer years of a pink welt on my entire body for years.
Well, if you would, please email me. Go to the website and simply click on Alien Hunter, and it'll email me automatically on alienhunter.org. And if you would, email me and send me some photos of your event and information, and I'll send – and it's all free. What we do is free. We don't charge anything for what we do.
Right.
I'll send you by return email some wonderful forms to fill out and some remarkable stuff on how to check yourself for fluorescence if, in fact, these entities have been tampering with you and in a visible realm.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Very good. Next up, we go to – no, we don't, because we're going to run out of time, and we'll get them all during the second half as we come back. Daryl, do you travel much as you do your research?
I do, sir. And as a matter of fact, the traveling that I do is this coming year, I will be in Athens. I'll be in Istanbul, Turkey, and I will be in Milano, Italy. And most of that's going to be on research for another book that I'm doing on the Native American and the DNA aspect of what it is we're doing in this phenomena.
Okay, well, stay with us. We're going to come right back and have final phone calls with Daryl Sims, the alien hunter, before Joshua P. Warren comes in with his paranormal moment. You know, we were talking with Daryl Sims about alien implants. Boy, have I had the implant of the day. Did you ever get a sliver that gets in so deep in your finger, in this case, that you could barely get it out? And about a year or so ago, I bought one of these sliver kits. They come with the really pinpointed tweezers and a little device that looks like a little tiny spear, and you use that to try to get your sliver out. And this sucker was in there so deep, I'm telling you, I had to make a hole in my finger to pull it out, and you're hitting the nerves. That's an implant. We'll be back in a moment with Daryl Sims. We'll take final phone calls next hour. Joshua P. Warren joins us with another one of his weekly paranormal moments on Coast to Coast AM. Well, something's going on, Daryl. I don't know what it is, but, even if there was a handful of cases that are legitimate by ETs, for example. This is a bizarre phenomenon, isn't it?
It is, sir, and it floors me. You did ask one question, and I need to answer that a little better. I think you asked where do we go, and there is a conference that's coming up in Burlington, Wisconsin, and Mary Sutherland's the contact there at burlingtonnews.net for those that are interested, and Stanton Friedman, Kathleen Martin, Colonel Jesse Marcel Jr., Donald Smith, Joseph Smith, all a wonderful, wonderful bunch of people there. So for those that are interested, that's up in that area, they can come to it.
And I'll when's this conference going to be, Daryl?
That conference is going to be on October the 30th, 31st, and November 1st, and I'll be doing about 5 presentations there myself.
Well, that's a lot. Okay, let's go to final callers here. Redding, California, we go. Hello, Richard. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi. How are you, Daryl and George? Yeah, I'm
sure,
a little nervous. So anyway.
You're fine.
Okay. Yeah, I got something similar to what you've been talking about all night, but I do have, like, the implants in my feet. I have x-rays of them, and you can't see it, but they hurt. And I know they're there, definitely. I've had them for about 7 years or so. But I don't know if it's demonic or what. I'd like to phone you or email you tomorrow and give you my stories. I've kept notes for about 7 years, you know, of what's going on. And through the walls every night and the daytime too, but mainly at night, it just seems like little something snaps from the walls and contacts me and hits on my skin, and it'll burn my skin. I don't know, you know, for sure what it is, but it's definitely there 100%. I even have people that tried to help me, and it came at them, these noises and that, at their home, far away from my house, once they knew they was trying to help me, and scared them where they wouldn't, you know, assist me anymore. And it's just pretty strange, but there's, I know they're implants, and I know the mind reading is there. They can, you know, read the mind, and because all of a sudden I'll have a thought, like I want to go ahead and talk, tell you about it or something like that. And then all of a sudden, I'll get a sharp pain in my head. It's like they'll even ground me where I can't go about, you know, in my day, and I have to sit on the couch until the dang headache goes away.
Well, why don't you write me and let me review some of the things, and we'll talk on email about your situation and find out what we can discover about it. I'd love to talk to you about
it. You know what, Daryl? I would guess that the numbers are even larger than most of us even have estimated.
It is. In fact, since we've been talking, I've probably got over 100 emails just from your show, just
Let's
while
go to
we're talking.
Sacramento we go. Hey, Will, you're on with Daryl Sims. Hi, Will.
Yes, I just wanted to point out a parallel to the samurai sword incident. In 1981, there was an episode in Rome, Ohio, sort of like a Skinwalker Ranch, where the family was harassed for weeks with these shape-shifting entities. And one day, a menacing-looking Bigfoot came bearing down on the farmer while he was on the tractor. He pulled out his Marine K-bar and stabbed it in the side, and a white liquid came shooting out all around, and it left like a mucus on the knife, and then the rest of it vanished pretty quickly.
You know, there's something really remarkable, and again, this is, now I'm going to tell you something kind of similar, but from a non-UFO person. As you know, I volunteered in the military during the Vietnam War. One of the things I found from one of my military buddies is he described to me, he was a military sniper, and I don't mean like, you know, a lot of military guys claim they're snipers, and they're not. Anybody that carried a rifle thought they was a sniper, I think.
This was a real sniper, right?
This guy, he's 100%. I mean, but he told me, it took me several months to drag this entire story out of him. He finally told me about a group of North Vietnamese regulars. That, if I have them correct there, and he said there was. My job was to take out the officers, the higher ups. He said, and my spotters caught him, and he gave me the location. I looked, and he said, and then all of a sudden, he said, "There's this." He described an alien entity there in the midst of them. And my question to him was, who was in charge, the guys with the AK-47s or the cosmic skinhead looking at him? He said, decidedly, the bug-eyed thing.
Interesting.
And I said, what did you do? And he said, He said, it's never, he said, that's the only one we never recorded. And I said, what do you mean? He said, get him. And I did.
Did it go down?
It did. And everybody departed. He said, but there was no question that that entity had all of them with their rifles under his control.
Amazing.
And the fascinating thing is he said, I'm not the only one that's done it. He said, I'm not into the UFO thing at all.
I have heard many cases about UFOs during the Vietnam War.
Yes.
Many of them. There was even one case where apparently there was some Russian troops there and American troops there, and they both stopped and looked at each other when this thing went by, and they went their separate ways.
Yes. Well, I hope that you're the gentleman that just spoke to us there, if he's not online, if he would email me, I'd love to talk to him about that event. If he would email me, I'd love to talk to him about any kind of physical evidence.
What's your email address?
My email address is, you can go to the website at alienhunter.org and simply type on alien, just click on Alien Hunter and it'll get it. But it's DarrellWSims@yahoo.com. DarrellWSims@yahoo.com.
All right. Let's go to Spartanburg, South Carolina, where William is there. William, go ahead.
Hello, George. Thanks for taking my call. And hello,
sure thing.
Well, I've got two things, and I'm a bit shy about talking about it because it always kind of spooks me. Well, for one, I have a severe case of xenophobia. I've had it ever since I was a child. And the weird thing is I can sit back and I can watch Star Trek, you know, Star Wars, all that other stuff. But I almost can't watch X-Files because anytime anything that even looks resembling a gray or something close to it, I just, after that, I'll have a hard time sleeping at night. I'll be thinking that they're coming in the window to come and get me. And it, you know, for years I've kind of dealt with it and I just like, well, you know, whatever. And now as I get older, I'm like, why me, you know? And part of it is, I think, it's because I listen to the show every night. But it's just gotten to a point where I'm not sure where to go with it anymore. And the other thing is, have you ever discovered a UFO connection to the Taos home?
A UFO connection to the what?
The Taos home.
It's an underground home. I think it's more, that's more of a construction, William. Something's going on.
Okay. No connection that I know of.
All right. One more caller here, and then I want to ask you a few more questions, and we'll come back with more. Judy, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Judy.
Yes. Do you ever have anybody that's over 70 coming to you with an alien abduction story? And about the people who live in the jungles of South America and Africa, do they have a different take on the aliens? And also about the Muslim faith people, have you ever had any stories from them?
What wonderful questions. The answer to your first question, let me hit the Brazil, the South American thing and the Native American thing. When I went to South America, they all asked me why such a famous investigator come to this country to investigate. You know, I mean, they said, we're not important. I said, yes, you are. And they said, well, but your best cases are in America. And I said, well, actually they're here. And they said, but you're all Indians for the most part. And they said, no, we're not. We're Portuguese. We're Italian. We're this. I said, yes. And when you came here and conquered this country, who did you marry? And I said, almost all of you are native Indians. Many of you are. And I said, if you'll look at the population of abductees, you'll find that they, in fact, are, again, they match my description of the 45% thing concerning the Indian. The second thing is that the entities there are fairly much like ours, with few exceptions. There are some. The movie Signs, the movie that called Signs, showed a green alien, human-like form there that these little Brazilian kids were looking at, and it scared them on the film.
Mm-hmm.
What most people don't realize is that part of the film is real. That wasn't made up. That they made the alien up based on that identity. That was the children's birthday party, and that thing walked by and scared everybody half to death. That part of the film was actually accurate.
Are you going to help push for disclosure? Good point. Are you part of those projects?
We could do a whole story on disclosure. I think
or lack of.
I love the concept of disclosure. I don't think it'll work for a lot of reasons. Number one is I used to be in the intelligence community. If you don't have any liars in the disclosure program right now, you will if it ever goes to Congress, if that makes any sense to you.
Is it all about money?
Somebody's going to salt it.
Power?
They're going to install some. The thing that bothers me is that most of the people that I have seen or heard about in the disclosure program that are testifying are honest, good, decent people who are simply reporting exactly what they saw or heard or knew. And I have no problem with that, and I respect them to the hilt for doing it. There are a couple of people there, at least two, maybe three, that I have some serious questions about. And if I can figure out that they're not telling the truth, those two or three, what do you think a congressional hearing's not going to vet those people? They will. And, of course, they will show them just like the truth tellers. And it'll almost destroy that whole idea. In my opinion, I think they're going at it the wrong way. I think we all want it, but I don't think it's going to happen that way. I really don't.
If some people can't feel these implants, they can't see these implants, they might not even know they have them, but they may suspect there's something strange going on. What do you expect them to do?
Well, you can do one of two things. One is you can, and I recommend this to people overall, if they come to me, their abduction scenarios, or their possible abduction scenarios or an implant or anything like that, my first response to them is you're like Pandora, and this is a box. What do you want to do? If you open this box, you'll never close it again. You think you will, but you won't. So be sure that's what you want to do, because you will live with this for the rest of your life. I have, everyone else has. So if you you can either leave the object in, or you can have it removed, or you can study it in situ in the body itself. And that to me makes sense to do that. But there are some people that feel greatly relieved, as Jeff did. Whenever the object was out, he said wonderful things happened to him. 99% of the people that we've removed objects from, we've removed over 23 out of 23 surgeries thus far, just with our medical team alone. Most of it we don't make public, but this is what we do. The point being that the vast majority of these people, with the exception of one, have all decided that it was a great thing that they were removed.
All right, let's go to Fairhope, Alabama. Hello, Paul. You're a first-time caller. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Hey, Daryl. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I've got a real quick question. I'm wondering if you can touch on the significance of in the construction of implants, what you guys may have found regarding gold and silver, and if you could maybe touch on how that relates to a character named Apollyon.
Oh, well, the we have found gold and silver in some of our implants. We found, the mother of a little girl, 6 years old, found four implants in a little girl's nose. And she found them in the little girl's nose twice. And how she found them was she came to a workshop that I was teaching and about people that had thought they might have implants, how the various different ways you might discover it. One of them is if you have a nasal passage implant, sometimes these things can be ejected by the body automatically, and sometimes you can do it by sneezing into a Kleenex and checking it, and that's exactly what this lady found. The little gold spheres were about the size of a dull pinhead. There were four of them in each event. The little girl describes the entities consciously in great detail, provided me with the implants, and I had them tested at York University under the care of Dr. Nick Balakas, and they found that the implants were 49% gold and 51% silver. They found that the implants themselves they look very smooth to the eye because they're very small. But if you look under microscope, you see that they are slightly pitted. And the scientist who was reviewing this said, if I can replicate, as far as I'm concerned, it's not alien. He was not able to replicate these implants. And he was very surprised by that. Doesn't mean they're alien or whatever. But what we're going to do with them next is test the isotopic ratios on those and other implants. Again, this is just a money thing, and everything has to go in its order because we just don't have that kind of money. And the isotopic ratios will tell us where the metals come from, whether they're from here or whether they're from out there in space or somewhere else. I suspect that we will find that these various metals, if they have various isotopic ratios that are different, and some of them are, we will find that they are, in fact, from the neighborhood. They're in our solar system, so to speak.
Let's go to Stephen, east of the Rockies. Stephen, thanks. Where are you calling from?
Iowa.
All right, Stephen, go ahead.
Do you have any intel on incident as follows? Shoot down, A, 1974, vicinity, Ramstein Air Base. Do you want the unit designation who did the shoot down?
I do not know that particular incident where someone was ordered to shoot, but I do know that there is a wonderful book out right now. I believe it's called
I think it's called Shoot 'Em Down.
It's called Shoot,
by
yes.
Frank Fascino.
Exactly. And the Russians did this before, and unfortunately, some of their aircraft got turned off, and they found out the flying without power was difficult, and they quit shooting at them. But I know for a fact that we have shot at them. I know. I honestly think that the intelligence community is as bad as some people may think that they are. They're probably looking out for your best interest, and that we're in a lot of trouble, and they know it, and they're not going to tell us because it's going to tip their hand as to how much they really do know.
Stephen,
well,
can you shed
any
light?
There's only one place I found this in print. I've never heard of it talked about on any documentary. Page 126 or 127 of Colonel Corso's book, Day After Roswell.
Good man, Corso. I liked him. I met him.
Yeah.
Good man.
With an incredible story, too. Stephen, yeah. Thank you so much. You know, he has notes. Bill Burns has been able to look at these notes. And who knows, there may be a sequel coming to The Day After Roswell.
Who knows?
It's a remarkable story. I mean, some question it, some don't believe in it, but, you know, why would a guy nearing death come forward with information like that, Daryl?
Well, my take on Roswell is a little different than other. It's a lot different than other people. In fact, those who want to hear it, I'll be glad to email it to them if they want to email me. But the bottom line is, I think that Roswell was a setup. I'm thinking with my intelligence hat on now. In other words, if I were an intelligence agent and I looked at Roswell, I would not see a flying saucer and dead aliens and all that. I just don't see that at all. I think that happened, but that's not what I think it was about. In my opinion, the question was, how do I get inside the United States government? Well, you send down a craft, you crash it. Doesn't matter how many of them live or die because you got a million of them anyway. They're just little toasters anyway, so to speak. They got all you need is one of them to survive, and it did.
Infiltration. Interesting.
They did, and they got us big time.
Daryl, keep in touch, and if you get some of that video of those craft that John was talking about, I'd like to post it at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, Joshua P. Warren with his paranormal moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie.